Two big questions have already been answered as the hot stove season continues on the eve of the winter meetings. I am Allison Footer from MLB.com. Welcome to the morning lineup. I am here with Richard Justice. Richard, let's get right to it. Giancarlo Stanton is headed to the Yankees. I think it's pretty funny. They certainly recovered from the devastation of not getting Shohei or Ohtani, and now they are going to have what has to be the most potent lineup in all of baseball. They were almost the most potent lineup in 2017. And now with Stan being added to this club, I mean, what was your reaction when you heard this was going down?
I think the Yankees showed that they're a great organization. I mean, this is not what they wanted to do. Their goal right now was to add two starting pitchers, at least one starting pitcher, probably two starting pitchers, and they felt they were good to go. What they did to this past 72 hours was they pivoted. They saw this as too good an opportunity to pass up. You know, I don't know how it's going to work out in terms of transferring the money to keep them under the salary cap and still add the luxury tax threshold and still add pitching. But the bottom line is, if you're a Yankees fan, you now get to see the two best power hitters in baseball, 59 and 52 home runs hitting back to back. And that's to me, that's the whole point. They're, you know, yesterday we talked about, okay, the Angels are going to have Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. That's going to be pretty good. Well, when the Yankees come to your town, you get to see Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge side by side.
Yeah, it's really fascinating that the Yankees were completely in the driver's seat, along with, of course, Giancarlo Stanton, who had 100% autonomy over where he was going to end up, if anywhere, leaving the Marlins. And so once it came out that Stanton rejected trades to the Cardinals, to the Giants, and that the Dodgers weren't really making any overtures, like really being serious about obtaining him, the Yankees were like, you know, they really didn't have to give up a lot. They're going to absorb the majority of the contract. Reports say like maybe all but $30 million for the life of the contract.
And their lower level prospects,
yeah,
as well.
They just were in a great position to be able to do this. I guess you have to consider them, even though they do have some pitching questions to address, and they do, like you said, they need starting pitching. But this has to make them, I would think, the favorites in the AL East.
Yeah, and the ripple effect to Boston now, that need for Dave Dombrowski to go out and get a power hitter, whether to play, whether it's Eric Hosmer or JD Martinez, that certainly is ramped up. It made the American League East more interesting. Yeah, they are the favorites now. I mean, they hit 241 home runs last year. You know, and I think just as a baseball fan, there's winning. You want your team to win, you know? Everybody, that's the goal. But if you can be interesting, and by last year, when the Yankees came to your town, like fans were going, okay, that's him right there. 6'7", 280 pounds. That's the guy. That, you know, it made the Yankees feel like the Yankees, to have this larger than life, humble kid who hit the ball out of sight. Now you've got the other guy. Giancarlo Stanton just turned 28 years old. He was the National League MVP. You know, as a baseball fan, whether you hate the Yankees or you love the Yankees, this is a day where you go, wow, that's pretty good right there. That's pretty good. Hats off to the Yankees.
Yeah, yeah, they got real interesting. So the NL MVP and the runner-up in the AL MVP race playing side by side is pretty delicious to pay attention to, no matter if you love them or you hate them, like you said. The other issue that was resolved before the winter meeting started was, of course, Shohei Ohtani picking a team. And with all of the speculation, it ended up being the Los Angeles Angels, which I don't think anybody really thought was a serious contender. Of course, we don't know what's happening behind the scenes. So that's a big coup for the Angels. And that makes them, I think, extremely relevant in the AL West.
Yeah, they were already going to be that. You know, they're heading in the right direction. Billy Epler re-signed Justin Upton. He acquired Jim Johnson to help pitch in the late innings. He's got Garrett Richards and Matt Shoemaker, Tyler Skaggs all coming back. So they were a good team already. And, oh, yeah, they have that guy, the best player in baseball, Mike Trout. And now they convinced Shohei Ohtani. This is something no one's done in 100 years, 99 years, to have a pitcher and a hitter. They convinced him they're going to have an open mind to it. We're going to let you pitch. Everyone agrees. Our MLB pipeline.com pipeline people said, He's a top 10 prospect at two positions. He's a top 10 prospect as a pitcher and a top 10 prospect as a hitter. Can he do it both? We don't know. But the Angels have convinced him, we're going to have an open mind about it. We're going to get you as many at-bats as we can, and we're going to find out. This, you know, the hot stove was pretty cool for a while. The hot stove heated up a lot the last couple of days.
Yeah, so the feather in the cap to Angels GM Billy Epler. Let's hear what he had to say about the Ohtani signing.
Where we are today started with a wish long ago that someday Shohei Ohtani would seek to play Major League Baseball. When we understood the process that Shohei would use to select his destination, we did not view this as a competition with other clubs. Rather, we saw this as an opportunity for this organization and our community to synergize with an incredible young man. He shares our vision for greatness. We have implemented a process-based approach here in everything that we do. We couple that approach with a strong set of organizational standards. Vince Lombardi once said, "The man on top of the mountain did not fall there," and we agree with that sentiment. There is no escalator, and there is no easy way to the top. We'll be doing this together as a baseball operation, step by step, through talent acquisition, efficient coaching, and comprehensive player development. This day is a culmination of a lot of hard work on the part of our professional scouts, our international scouts, and our front office staff. You all sacrifice so much of your time for what is often a thankless job. Today, you guys should feel proud.
Ohtani wanted to make a decision sooner than later out of respect for the process and for the other teams that need to continue on doing business this offseason. Let's hear what the Ohtani camp had to say about this agreement.
Hi, my name is Shohei Ohtani.
This is the first time I've been talking in front of such a big crowd that I actually kind of forgot what I was going to say. You guys are making me all nervous. First of all, I would like to give thanks to all the Angels front office, the staff, owner Mr. Arthur Moreno, President John Carpino, General Manager Billy Epler, as well as Mr. Mike Socha and the whole Angels staff. Thank you very much. I'd also like to thank my parents, my family, the teammates that I've played with in Japan, like the coaching staff, all the Japanese fans, all those who have helped me get to this point. Thank you very much. Again, like I said, if it weren't for everybody, I wouldn't be standing here. I look forward to becoming part of the Angel family. I look forward to playing in front of all you great Angel fans. And hopefully we could bring a championship back to Anaheim.
So the winter meetings are getting started. And this is a fun thing for fans to pay attention to, for the outsiders looking in. Just a little bit of insight what the winter meetings are. It's just an industry-wide convention. It lasts about 4 days. Everybody in the industry converges into one hotel, every front office, all of the media, the PR directors, the athletic trainers, anybody who has anything to do really with Major League Baseball gets together. And of course, the minor leagues have their meetings too. And sometimes, Richard, there's a lot of activity. Sometimes it's kind of just sets the groundwork and there's activity later. I think because the winter meetings are actually a week later than they normally are. The fact that Ohtani's off the board, Giancarlo Stanton is off the board. Now everybody's open for business. And I have a feeling that all these free agents are going to start falling off the board very quickly. And we could see a very active week in Orlando this week.
Yeah, the winter meetings have changed some. You know, it's there was the day when Bill Veeck and Roland Heeman set up a table in the lobby of the Diplomat Hotel in Fort Lauderdale and said, okay, we're open for business. You know, the digital age has changed that. GMs stay in their rooms. They make trades by text. But there is some value to meeting face-to-face. And now, this comes at a perfect time. Now with Ohtani off the board, with Stanton off the board, now it's the Cardinals have teams want to get things done by Christmas Day. The Cardinals now have a couple of weeks to go out and get that guy to pitch the ninth inning, to get that guy to hit home runs. If the Giants are going to take a step back to competitiveness, they have to go out and get bats. They have to get somebody to play third base. So all these things, you know, and another team to keep an eye on, the Rays, are they in? Are they out? Are they going to deal Chris Archer? Are they going to deal Alex Colome? Does that mean if they do those things, does that mean they trade Evan Longoria? All those things. So to get the two things that we thought were holding the market up, to get them off out of the way now. The Giants and Cardinals can see what the landscape is. You know, the Phillies who want to spend money, the Mariners, the Red Sox, all those teams. It's time to go. It's time to go, boys. It's only a couple of weeks left.
Yeah, I think that the players that I've talked to in the past, the free agents that have then signed with teams, say that they get a little bit nervous if it's January 1 and they still don't have a team. So, there's so many big names that are out there and they want this resolved sooner than later. And that's part of what's going to be, I think, intriguing about the winter meetings is that it's not just trades, but because of the free agents that are out there looking for teams and that are really impact players, you're going to see a lot of agents. You're going to see a lot of like trolling the lobby. You know, the lobby at these hotels becomes like the be all end all place to be seen during the winter meetings. Agents take their stroll through the lobby in the middle of the day, acting like it's something that they're, you know, not choreographing like ahead of time.
And the writers ask, are you interested in the pick a team? Are you interested in the Braves? I got to tell you, my guy loves the Braves. Headline in the Atlanta Journal tomorrow. His guy loves the Braves. And another guy comes up, hey, any interest in playing for the White Sox? My guy loves the White Sox. I got to tell you that. Headline in the Chicago Tribune tomorrow. That's the way the game works. And one other thing about the free agent market this year is there's really impact players on there, but there's not that many of them. Scott Boras controls four guys. He doesn't control them. He represents them. Moustakas, Hosmer, J.D. Martinez, and Jake Arrieta. And so, if you want a pitcher, you got four guys you're looking at. You're looking at Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb, Yu Darvish, and in the best tradition of Rick Perry, I have forgotten the fourth name. Arrieta, Darvish, Cobb, Lance Lynn. That's four. And if you want a first base, if you want a power hitter, you got J.D. Martinez, you got Moustakas, you got Hosmer. So I would think like when the Red Sox start to move, when the Giants and the Cardinals start to move, that this thing could get intense.
The first order of business, of course, will be Sunday night when they announce who, if anyone, was voted into the Hall of Fame from the modern baseball era ballot. So there are a lot of big names, on the ballot. And these are, of course, guys who fell short of the voting by the Baseball Writers Association of America. In that voting, they have 15 years to make it on that ballot. Of course, now it's 10, but a lot of these guys were grandfathered in. And they get their second chance through what used to be called the Veterans Committee. So now there's all different names and all different eras. And this is a year that there's a long list of players who are eligible. I think that I'd like to maybe concentrate on Jack Morris and Alan Trammell. I feel like those two are two that seem to be getting a lot of, verbal support from a lot of people who think that they're Hall of Famers. I want to say, let's start with Jack Morris, because this, to me, I feel like Jack got the shaft because he was really, really close going into his 15th and final year of voting, and he fell short, and it had a lot to do with how crowded that ballot got. And I think that that's why he kind of fell short more than it was based on merit. It was a bunch of guys from the 90s, of course we know about this whole era, that got on the ballot. And I don't know, I feel like it was a little bit unfair what happened to Jack.
Well, three Detroit Tigers, and one of them is not on the ballot, Lou Whitaker, deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. Now, I don't feel if I were calling Jack today, I would not offer him any encouragement. This process hasn't elected a living player since 2001 in the various forms of this committee, and the only player it elected was Ron Santo, who also got screwed in the voting by the BBWAA, who didn't get it. At a time when there's better ways than ever to assess a player's career, sometimes the votes don't reflect that. So since 2001, Ron Santo is the only player put in. Here's who Jack Morris is. On October 27th, 1991, he pitched the greatest postseason game in history. Game 7 of the World Series, he threw 10 shutout innings and beat John Smoltz and the Braves 1-0. No player has ever been better than that. He got 66.7% of votes in 2012. That was his 13th year of eligibility. And then, like you mentioned, Biggio, Bonds, Clemens, Piazza, Schilling, Sosa came on. He slipped to 61.5. I read this. He aged off the ballot with more voter support than any candidate since Orlando Cepeda, who got in with one of those committees. And you know, Jim Bunning, Nellie Fox, all those guys got that percent, all got in by the Veterans Committee. His biggest win, his biggest selling point is that he was a gamer. He had 254 wins, 43rd all time. He won 20 games three times. Okay, even though I know I buy into analytics, hook, line, and sinker, but there is something to be said for a guy that threw 175 complete games, who had more wins in the 80s than anybody else. And I understand the ERA is not Hall of Fame caliber, but we have to understand, as with Mussina and Schilling, he pitched in an era when the ballparks got smaller, the strike zone became the size of a postage stamp at times. You know, the base, some people would say the bats got harder, the baseballs got harder, and oh, by the way, some of the players got bigger too. He just, to me, and this is true of Whitaker and Trammell, and Whitaker really is getting screwed because he's not even get disappointed on Sunday. Those guys are Hall of Famers, and they won a World Series, and Jack Morris defined what greatness was on those teams.
Yeah, so you think 254 wins, I mean, it almost hurt him with some of the younger voters, right? So through the BBWA voting, that was almost a mark against him. I mean, I get it, because when you talk about 175 complete games, so he did control the entire game and whether or not the team won or lost in those games. I get a little bit, and he
wanted that responsibility. He would tell you he was a jackass on the days that he pitched. Stay away from me. It's my game today. And that to me is the definition of number one guy. It's my game. We're going to win today or we're going to lose today. And it's on me.
Right. He had longevity, and yes, his numbers might not be like the ERA may be a little bit higher than a lot of guys that have gotten in, but you do feel like he is a Hall of Famer. I get a little, wins still mean something to the pitcher. So when I talk to people in the game today, and I have friends who are in these front offices that are analytically minded with all the metrics, you can't have these conversations with them. There's not a conversation to be had of maybe there's something else to look at. And when I say like if you were to suggest that a win means something to the pitcher, even though it shouldn't mean anything when you're evaluating them. The pitcher still cares about wins and losses. They shut down, like they turn away. They can't have the conversation. That's where the game is gone, and that's fine. But I do think that he has a chance because we don't know who's on these committees, there's some crusty old people, I'm sure, but I do feel like they have a lot of respect for what he did in his career. And I don't think that one game, I mean, that game seven in 1991 was probably the best pitch game ever. Not ever, but one of them. But that does not, that does not make you, well, Don Larsen, but that does not make you a Hall of Famer.
No, but Don Larsen's game did not decide a championship. Right. This one was.
That's true.
We win a World Series or we lose a World Series. Jack, let me know how it's going to go. It was on him.
Yeah, and even when Tom Kelly wanted to take the ball from him, and then Jack, of course, wasn't going to let him do that. And the famous line is, okay, it's just a game.
Yeah, from this World Series, I said to him one day, Dallas Keuchel did one of those Jack Morris things. They came to him after the sixth inning, and he said, get away from me. And Morris screamed, not after the sixth inning. You don't even look at me till the eighth or ninth inning. I went, okay, calm down, take a deep breath, which was true. And that's the way he looked at it. Sparky Anderson, his manager, here comes Morris and Petrie walking onto the field when the Tigers were great. And he looks at those two guys and points at those two guys and said, see those two guys? I can't never get fired. I will never get fired because I got those two guys right there, Petrie and Morris. And that's the respect he was looked at.
Yeah, and I mean, I asked Jack actually during whatever I don't know if this is the ALCS or the World Series, but I said it has to make your stomach churn a little bit when everyone is talking about a pitcher being allowed to pitch past the sixth inning in a postseason game as something unusual and reflected upon fondly. And it's just like, you know, because to Jack it was like, this is ridiculous. I mean, you go 7, 8, 9, you preferably go 9. The game has changed a lot, and I don't know, I feel like he's got a pretty good chance. But like you say, they haven't elected any living person in 16 years, so I guess I shouldn't get too excited about this.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to Alan Trammell, who I believe that there's a lot of sort of youngish voters, not veterans committee voters, but certainly BBWA voters who actually do feel like he is a Hall of Famer.
Right. And here's the weird part of that. So it's the analytics guys that don't want to hear about Jack Morris being in the Hall of Fame. Pitch to the score, that's all ridiculous. Nobody ever did that. Except, you know, a guy like me, I was there. I saw him do it. Eddie Murray and Jack Morris were not very good players when the score was 10-1. I mean, maybe the data tells me I'm wrong. But anyway, on the other hand, there's Alan Trammell. And the data, the analytics, the farther we can get our fingers into how good his career was, say he's a Hall of Famer and there shouldn't even be an argument about it. I mean, with him, he is a Hall of Famer. Every time I see him, I just want to apologize. Like, what are you looking at? This guy played 20 seasons. He was a 6-time All-Star. He's a World Series MVP. And just, you know, he topped out at 40.9% in 2016. I think that was his last year on the ballot, which tells you, you know, either I don't know what a Hall of Famer is or there's some people that don't know. But just go to what he's 93rd all-time in WAR. He's 62nd in WAR among position players, 35th in defensive WAR. He's 134th in hits. That was Alan Trammell right there on the phone. He's 181st in stolen bases. Among Jaws that Jay Jaffe does, he's above average for a Hall of Famer. Bill James' peak WAR, he's above what an average shortstop should be in the Hall of Fame. And all this stuff that you look at. His career has to be taken, you know, you say, well, 6 All-Stars, that doesn't blow me away. Cal Ripken played in 20 or something. But the thing is, Trammell, Yount, Ripken, they were the shortstops of that era. I mean, this was the best era of shortstops maybe ever. And he was right there, and he defined winning. And I can tell you stories about Morris and Trammell and Whitaker and Darrell Evans and those guys. They're everything you want in baseball players in that they stayed after the game and talked about the game and replayed the game. I always thought if Nolan Ryan could play with Alan Trammell, he would be his favorite player because he was that sort of player.
Do you feel like anybody else on this list is going to get close? Dale Murphy, Dave Parker, Ted Simmons, Louis Tiant, who am I missing? Mattingly, I mean, Steve Garvey, Tommy John. Like, who would you like to make a case for if you could?
Well, Dale Murphy and Dave Parker are interesting in that both, I mean, Dale Murphy was on the road. This is a sad story. I mean, he was on the road to being one of the great players in the history of the game. And knee injuries killed his career at 32, basically. He was done at 37. Dave Parker, same thing. 7-time, he had a great start, and he had a great finish in between. He had the Pittsburgh drug trials between, you know, here's the number about Dave Parker. Between 1975 and 79, his WAR was 31. That trailed only, take a breath, Mike Schmidt, George Brett, Rod Carew. That's the class of player he was in. And that's the thing about looking as you go down this list to Ted Simmons and Louis Tiant and these guys, Tommy John, Don Mattingly. They were either great for too short a period of time, or as in the case of Tommy John, who played 26 seasons, they had astonishing overall numbers, as sort of with Burt Blyleven, who's in the Hall of Fame. But did they have that meteor the way that you have to have a meteor, the way Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Sandy Koufax? No, they didn't. It was either not enough from the total body of work, or the total body of work just wasn't at a high enough level. And when I just look at these names on the list, it just reminds me of how hard the game is and how special Cooperstown is when you're selected to that club and you're up there on Sunday afternoon with Aaron and Frank Robinson and Willie Mays. This list is a reminder. These are players that are all good enough to be considered for the Hall of Fame. And it reinforces that the Hall of Fame is an unbelievable honor.
Yeah. And I want to say one last thing about Marvin Miller. And
yes,
when we look at the people that are in the Hall of Fame, mostly players, some executive, managers, umpires, there's, it covers more than just players who were extraordinary on the field. So it really is about contributions to the game of baseball. This is why I'm still mad that Buck O'Neill was not included in being inducted all those years ago, because there is nobody who brought more attention to the Negro Leagues than Buck O'Neill. I don't care if he was an average hitter. He is the reason why it kind of came back onto the map. So to me, contributions to baseball, and with Marvin Miller to not be recognized by the Hall of Fame, to not be in, I think is a great injustice. And when you are the guy who invented free agency and you have changed the entire way that the industry works, that you gave, that you were able to give rights to the players that they didn't have before, it doesn't matter if you're mad at him for being the reason why players are now making $20 million a year. That to me is not a reason to leave somebody out. He has been one of the most prolific figures in Major League Baseball in the last many decades. I remember in 2001, when the Astros players, all the players throughout baseball were doing their Players' Choice Award voting, I think it was for, and Roy Oswalt, who was a rookie, and he said to me, Who's Marvin Miller? Because it was the Marvin Miller Man of the Year Award. And I said, well, he's the guy that's going to make you very, very wealthy in a couple of years. He invented free agency. And Roy's face just, I mean, his eyes got as big as saucers. I don't know. What do you think? I just feel like you can't shun somebody just because you're mad at what they did in the game if it was a positive for so many people.
He shaped the game.
Yes.
The game that we have today, it is Marvin Miller's vision. You know, remember people said free agency is going to ruin the game. If you give players any right, just, you know, this, if you don't remember 1970, you don't remember what the game was. Frank Robinson told me he drove in 100 plus runs, 150 runs or something one year. They cut his pay. Why did they cut his pay? Because they could. One of the Dodger pitchers, I don't remember who it was, says he had a great year. He thinks he's going to go in to see Branch Rickey, and he's pretty sure he's going to get a raise. And the first thing Branch Rickey said was, "You had a hell of a year," or he wouldn't have said the word hell. "You had a great year, and we're going to let you come back." And the players had no rights. You had no you could not negotiate for everything. Marvin Miller won them the basic rights that workers in every other industry take for granted. And by the way, the game got 100 times better for it. That free agency made the game better in ways large and small. And if I'm a player on this committee, or if I'm a baseball writer on this committee, I would stand up and scream, Marvin Miller has to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, if the Hall of Fame is for people who made an impact and made the game better, Marvin Miller is – I can't imagine how many people – would be ahead of Marvin Miller on this list. Bud Selig, who got in 2017 this year, he said, this is a tough thing for him to say because they fought like crazy. And he said, no, Marvin has to be in the Hall of Fame. Marvin should be in the Hall of Fame. His contributions to the game were too enormous to overlook. You know, while we all feared free agency, we feared players having rights. Everything players have today, you know, Roy Oswalt, do you like your dental benefits? Do you like your health benefits? Do you like your pension? All those things are a product of Marvin Miller's negotiating and winning in court against the owners.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess you just wonder, I mean, because they don't make it public, right? Who's on these committees, who the voters are.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's pretty, it's some Hall of Famers. It's some sports writers. And I don't know. They'll give us the vote total. And there's like 15 people.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was like 16 or 17 or 18 that were voting on Schuerholz and Selig. And it just bothers me. You can't be spiteful. And not only did Selig, I'm sure that they feared it, that they hated it. And I don't blame them. And I don't blame the owners for hating, how much power the players did. My whole philosophy was, you know, somebody's making all this money. I'd rather see that go to the players personally than the owners. But it's
well, the pot is much bigger because of Marvin. Some of this was the natural growth of the game. Bud Selig talks about his first 5 or 6 years as an owner. He would go in there and sit. He was the new kid and keep his mouth shut. And every time Marvin's name would come up, Gussie Bush would start hitting people's in the shin all around him with his cane. We will not give them one thing. Well, they ended up winning. The players won their rights in court, and we're all better for it.
Yeah. Well, my prediction is that Tuesday night. So the meetings are essentially Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday is the Rule 5 draft, and then there is a mass exodus of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who then head to the airport right around 11:30 in the morning on Thursday. Sunday night is when everyone's still arriving. So it's really those 3 days. My guess is that Tuesday will be the big night, that something will break at like 10 o'clock at night, and there'll be just a waterfall from there.
A couple of years ago, Joe Madden was coming back from dinner one night. I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. And I said, "How's it going?" He goes, "We just got John Lester. I think I'm a better manager now."
Exactly. He's never looked so smart.
He became a lot smarter. His IQ went up many points.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this was fun, Richard. Enjoy the winter meetings, and I'm sure someone will be catching up with you there, and you'll give us all the news. So it's been a pleasure, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks.